very much. It's really great to be here at Coast Church, and hopefully we'll get the screen up, the picture up soon. But creation is a foundation. Creation makes a big difference in our lives, understanding that God created, and God is a miraculous God, a God who created miraculously. And a lot of people, because of the... It's quite controversial, even in the church, about creation these days. And a lot of people say, well, does it really matter? Can't we just say, agree that God created? How that he did it, does that really matter? Well, it actually does, and creation is a key to the gospel. A lot of people don't realize the connection between creation and the events of creation and what Jesus did and what we celebrated at communion. So, and to illustrate that as to Jesus' ministry and what he did as far as his death and resurrection is concerned, it goes right back to creation. And when we don't understand that, we can be confused and upset and not knowing what's going on in our lives. But when we do understand it, it makes a difference. Now, an example of that is what happened to the disciples when Jesus was crucified. And it caused all sorts of upset and depression and trouble in amongst them. And we read there about the two disciples on the road to Emmaus, don't we? And about how depressed they were, dragging their feet along the road. And Jesus caught up with them and started talking to them. And why are you looking so upset? Why are you so depressed? And they poured out their hearts about why they were depressed and how they thought that Jesus was going to be the Messiah. And Jesus said, oh, you slow of heart to believe everything that the prophets have said. Remember, he said that. And then it says, beginning at Moses and the prophets, he expounded to them in the scriptures all the things concerning himself. So he began with Moses, and Moses, of course, he wrote Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, but starts with Genesis. And so the gospel begins in Genesis. Have you heard, I was talking to Darren and he was saying about evangelism, passion for evangelism here. And I guess you folk get trained in evangelism and about telling a story and sharing a gospel package or something like that. Are you familiar with the little bridge, the bridge illustration? Familiar with that one? And you would be aware, of course, it talks about the here we are on this side and God is on that side. And there's a great big chasm between us and between God, and how we try to stretch across that chasm, how we are aware that there's something wrong, and about the issue of death, the fact that, where does death come from? Why do we die? Why is there disease and suffering? And so this chasm is there. And then the gospel is that we can't cross it, but that Jesus crossed it. By his death and resurrection, by his death, he crossed the chasm. And so now we can go and we can be united with the Lord, come to know God in a personal way by crossing that chasm. Now, have you ever been to a movie and come in halfway through a movie and you really don't know what's going on? You know, that sometimes happens, doesn't it? And you miss the beginning. And so that illustration is a great illustration, but in our culture today, a lot of people don't quite get it because they miss the beginning. And so when you look at the bridge here, the question is, well, that chasm, what is that chasm all about? Where did that come from? How did that get there? And what's the deal? And then the story about God. God, I thought that God was just a human invention, that science has shown that there is no God. And those are questions that come up and that cause blockages to people being able to put their trust in Christ and experience that reuniting with the Lord. And why is it like that today? Well, the big issue is evolution. And it's not surprising when you think about it. Like, these are just an example of some cuttings out of newspapers about evolution. And we see it everywhere about how there's no discussion of God creating, of God having a plan for the world, but it's all evolved over millions of years. And people today think, well, it must be true because it's science. And science is about facts. And so that's the big issue today. And I'm going to deal with that. And a lot of people are impacted by that. And some of us here too will be thinking, I'm not quite sure how this all works out. I've got confusion, or there's the questions that I have. We hopefully will put this on the right way. Now, this guy, Kenneth, sent us an email a little while ago. And he said, I was raised in the church until my teens before rejecting it and declaring myself an atheist agnostic. So raised in the church, went right away. Why? He says, the creation evolution issue was the number one sticking point for me. How could I possibly believe the Bible if it was wrong from the very start? And that's why people are very passionate about learning to connect the Bible with the real world. And as you came in, you would have got, did you get a little free magazine? Did everybody get one of those? Look something like that, wrapped up in a wrapper, and it has a little pen in it, is that right? So I'll talk about that later on, but that's you often think, what would be a great resource to help? And that is a great resource to help. But I want to mention how you can get information regularly, and you can do it through the website, Creation website. If you want to find out about creation, where would you go? Creation.com, of course. If you want to find out about evolution, where would you go? Creation.com, of course. You can go to those other sites. Of course, you need to do your research, but it's a great amount of resources there, thousands of articles, and there's a topics bar up here where you can find topics on all sorts of questions. I don't know if you've ever been, sharing with somebody, maybe a friend or somebody at school or somebody at where you work, and they find out you go to Coast Church, and they say, well, how can you believe the Bible? It doesn't say anything about dinosaurs. What about dinosaurs? Or you might be talking to them and they might say, well, where did Cain get his wife from? Or what about carbon dating? Or that evolution's been proved. It's a fact. We see it happening. Has anybody had questions like that? They come up all the time, don't they? You know, if you're not getting questions, basically you're not really trying to share your faith in today's culture. And so that's where you can get on the topics there. There's a lot of topics. And also you can connect into an email alert. You might be thinking, how I don't really feel I got the time to come up to speed with this. Well, the email alert system is something that you can do that. And it puts out various items and articles about things and something that catches your interest, something that's topical, something that's coming up, you can get connected through there. And to get the email, basically, did you get some of these? Did anybody got any of those on their seats? They're cool, aren't they? Did you know? I think there's about half a dozen different ones, and all the children have gone out, so that they're usually the kids want to collect collect them as a set. Did you know? And questions there, Venus spins backwards. Did you know that? Did you know Venus spins backwards? And it's through this little slip that you can get connected to the email news. That's the point. So you've got a pen, they've got the slips, and so all you need to do, turn it over, it's got the answer to the question, and you can fill out your name and email address on there. Isn't that cool? So there's the way you can put your name. And when you do that, some of the folk from the friends group, just in a minute or two, they'll come down and collect them. So if you fill it out, hand it to the side, and they'll be able to be collected, and you'll be connected into the email alert system. So that's the way it goes. Now we're going to start with creation. The New Testament always starts with creation as far as Jesus Christ is concerned. So just fill it, they'll pick it up in a minute. By him, who? Jesus Christ. By Jesus Christ, all things were created. Things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers, rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. They created by him and they were created for him. And so that's where we start. And we need to get our thinking straight on creation because it affects so many things. Now, I wonder how your thinking's going. I've got a question for you. See how you're going. That question is to do just a simple question about the sun and the land plants. You all set? The sun and the land plants. Which came first, the sun or the land plants? Who thinks the sun was first? Who's for the sun? Sun came first. Okay, who thinks that the land plants were first? A few people. Who doesn't know? Who doesn't care? Well, you see, this is an interesting question to help us understand where we are thinking. You know, we have things in our minds, ideas, which we're not aware of, and they're influencing us. They're affecting the way we live our lives, and we're not even aware that they're there. And when we think about the sun and the land plants, well, of course, where did the sun come from? Well, there was a great big mass of dust and gas swirling around in the galaxy. There was no earth, there was no sun, there was no solar system, but it came together under gravity. Have you heard of that idea, the nebula hypothesis? And then eventually it came together. Now, this doesn't work, and we've got DVDs and that showing all the problems with this, but this is a story. And the sun formed, gases came together, and then the nuclear reaction started on the sun, and the earth was formed, and there's other planets going around. And then what happened was there was no life on earth. And over millions of years, eventually life popped into existence on the earth, and it was in the oceans, and then it developed into plants in the oceans, and then it came out onto the land. Now, the thing is, who was looking at that? How did they know that happened? Well, that's a story. We'll go into that more in detail. So the sun was first, and the land plants came out onto the land after millions and millions and millions of years. But, you know, it would be nice if somebody was actually there, wouldn't it? Could actually tell us what they saw. And that's where we go back to the very first book, beginning with Moses. And we go back there and it explains how things happen. And we read there about a God who created supernaturally, a God of order, a God who had a plan, and he created different things on different days. And so we look at that in Genesis chapter 1 and we say, well, when did the sun first appear? When was that? When he made night and day? No, that would be day one, wouldn't it, on day one? But it doesn't tell us that he made the sun on day one. When does it tell us that he made the sun? Day four. So the sun was on day four. When were the land plants? God gathered the waters together into one place, and it was on day three. Let the land bring forth vegetation. And so a lot of people say, how could that possibly be? How can you have days without the sun? And how can you have land plants? How would they survive without the sun? Well, it was only one day. And there was light. God said in the beginning on day one, let there be light. And there was light. So, and that was the first day. So what do you need for a day? You don't actually need the sun for a day. You just simply need a rotating earth. The sun doesn't make the day. You need a rotating earth and a source of light. What was that source of light? The Bible doesn't actually tell us what the source of light is. But the point is that I'm making is that we have in our minds certain ideas, and they actually contradict what the people, the scientists or the people who weren't there making up their story say, contradicts what the Bible says. And so if we just stretch the days to long periods of time, it's not going to solve it. It's not going to make the Bible agree with what the scientists say, because the order is all wrong in this and in lots and lots of other things. And so God created in 6 days. God spoke and it was so. He created the sun on day four. And we can read there, when did he make the kangaroos? What day was that? Day six, that's right. And what about the elephants? What day was that? Day six. What about the dinosaurs? When was that? So how do we know that the elephants were on day six? It doesn't mention elephants. It's a land animal, same as a dinosaur. Land animals, so dinosaurs and elephants and tigers were created on day six. What else was created on day six? People. So that means dinosaurs and people lived at the same time. Is that right? It does. Actually, there's a book up there about dire dragons, explaining about amazing evidence of dinosaurs and people encountering dinosaurs. So that was on day six. We read there how God said, let us make man in our image. And so God created them in his image. Male and female, he created them. And we read about that. So that's how marriage was about. But at the beginning, we created the man out of the dust of the earth. And I just got some pictures I'm going to show, which come out of our children's book. Come on, click on. You'll have to click it forward. Can you do that? That's right, a children's book. So they're little cartoons. So I hope that's cool. So here we've got No, back one. Adam and Eve. Here's Adam naming the animals. There's Mr. Dinosaur, Mrs. Dinosaur, Mr. Giraffe, Mrs. Giraffe. No, Mrs. Adam. And so God said, it's not good for the man to be alone. I will create a suitable helpmeet for him. We put him in a sleep. Didn't start with the dust of the earth to make a woman. Took a rib from his side. And then there was the woman. The woman. Wow, he said, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. And that's the reason why a man leaves his father and his mother and he's joined to his wife and the two become one. It's all about marriage, the origin of marriage right there in the beginning. God created marriage and we seem to be a bit confused about it today. But you know, that's the other thing. We need to get it straight. And so when you think about it, every major Christian doctrine has its foundation in Genesis. It's like a seedbed for Christian doctrine. And here's, I could run through a whole list. The authority of God. God is the one who rules because he created it all. The goodness of God. He created a good world. There was no death. There was no suffering. The value of man, created in the image of God. The seven-day week, man's relation to his creation. It's to rule over the creation. These are huge issues in our culture today about all sorts of things. The oneness of mankind. We are all one blood. And what marriage is, we could go on with a longer and longer list. So creation is foundational to so many things. And I don't know if you've heard of a guy called an astrophysicist called Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's put out quite a number of documentaries and very interesting ones. And he was asked about, do you believe in a higher power? And people like to know when somebody's famous and on TV, they would like to know about these things. Do they believe in God? And he says, well, every account of a higher power that I've seen described, of all religions that I've seen, include many statements with regard to the benevolence of that power. That this power is good. And he says, when I look around at the universe and all the way the universe wants to kill us, he said, I find it hard to reconcile that with statements of beneficence. What's he saying? How can there be a good God in the universe that we live in, which is trying to kill us in so many different ways? And that's a big issue. You might have friends that ask that question, particularly if there's sickness or death or something on the television about some attack or something like that. And the answer, of course, is the Bible gives us the answer that it was because the first man and the first woman disobeyed the Creator. And that's sin coming into the world. And as a consequence of that, they were put out of that relationship. That's where the gap comes from. That's where the chasm comes from as a consequence of this action. And that's why Jesus had to come to die on the cross to pay the penalty for sin. So you'd say to Neil deGrasse Tyson, you say, Neil, the issue is you're looking through the wrong set of glasses. You're trying to understand the world looking through evolution glasses. And it doesn't make sense. Of course it doesn't make sense. You've got to start with Bible glasses, and the Bible explains where death and suffering comes from, why there are asteroids, why there are tsunamis, and all those sorts of things. And it also explains that we live in a world, the whole of creation's been groaning since childbirth until now. There's been a groaning that we live in. So Neil, it's not the sort of world that God created. But then that is why Jesus Christ came. And we read there, that's the whole story of the gospel there. As in Adam, all die. Even so in Christ, shall all be made alive. Death came as a consequence of Adam. Life comes through Jesus Christ. And we read there, the first Adam is the man in the Garden of Eden. The last Adam, Jesus is called the last Adam. Because through his death and resurrection came life for us. And so there's the gospel right there. So this little illustration, now we can make sense of why there's a chasm there, who this God is and what he's done, and why the Christ, and why he came, and how that all fits together. And so you see, the gospel is actually founded on Genesis as the whole basis for it. And so we got to get Genesis right, understand it, be confident that we can believe it, be confident that it's true. true, not to have all sorts of doubts and misgivings about it and be concerned that maybe science has proved it's not true. It was written by, you know, ancient shepherds who didn't know anything about the world. We got to be confident that it's true. And that's what we're talking about this morning. And so we talked about creation. Creation, you can actually summarize it as seven C's. And it's a very simple way of doing it, and yet it's very profound, because this is the history, his story, what happened in the world, the way God made things. God created, then there was the fall, corruption, then we read about the catastrophe of Noah's flood, and then there was the Tower of Babel, and we read then about Christ coming. So we're covering a lot of ground, aren't we, here? The Christ coming. Who was he? He's the creator, dying on the cross. Why did he do that? To pay the penalty of sin. And so you see how it all fits together as a consequence of the seven C's of history. So that's what I want to talk about and illustrate, is that how long did it take? Well, God created in 6 days. He rested on the seventh. And then that was about 6,000 years ago. So we're looking at a history of 6,000 years. And for a lot of people, that's a bridge too far. 6,000 years. You can't believe that the world is only 6,000 years old. And some of these, you can actually, and we'll explain why. But some of the comments and discussion that you see on various web articles and on news reports, they often get into talking about creation. And the astounding way that people refer to people who believe in 6,000 years. But you know, that's what the Bible says, that God did in 6,000 years, and that is the truth. And the point that I want to make about that, how do we know it's true? Because people saw it, and then they wrote it down. People were there and saw it happen. And we read about this, the account of Christ. How do we know what he did? Well, 2 Peter in chapter 1 says, we did not follow cunningly devised fables. It's not a made-up story that we're talking to you about, but we were eyewitnesses of his majesty. It's based on eyewitnesses, and that's the New Testament refers to that in many places, about the eyewitnesses to Christ. That's how we know what happened in the past. We weren't there, but there were people who were, and it's the same with basically every event. You know, the Tower of Babel, there were people there. The Noah's flood, there were people there, only eight. Actually, my ancestors go back. My ancestors were there. Your ancestors were there too. Everybody alive in the world today, our ancestry goes back to Noah and his family. And then, of course, the fall and in the garden when they took the fruit, there were two people there. And the creation, well, God was there. He would have told Adam about it. And Adam was there on day six. So it's based on eyewitnesses. It's based on people that were there. Now, this is one of my granddaughters, and she really loves the Lord, and she's involved in youth group and things like that. And she used to be inviting her friends from school along to youth group. And at school, when she was in grade 10, 14 years of age, they started teaching about evolution. Basically, in all schools, they teach about evolution. Even in Christian schools, they have to teach about evolution. It's part of the curriculum. That's the way Christian schools won't get funding unless they teach about evolution. And so she was in the government school. And when she started hearing about evolution and seeing the fossils and things like that, the evidence that was put up, she was just dumbfounded. Don't know why she was, but she was. And anyway, really upset. And her friends, the kids, understand what it means. These kids know what evolution means, because her friend said to her in lunchtime, well, Lily, looks like the Bible's not true after all. They get it. They understand if evolution's true, if all this stuff they're teaching at school is true, and we got teachers and they're scientists, if that's true, the Bible's not true. And so she didn't really know what to do about this. And anyway, she ended up talking to me, and I explained a couple of things. There's an article on our web as a consequence of what I discussed with Lily. But one of the things that I said to her is, look, don't let it worry you that they're talking about facts. Facts are what things that people see. Science is about observation. Science is about experiment. You know, and I've studied as an engineer. I know what it is to set up experiments and make careful measurements and have to repeat them. Science is based on the repeatable experiment. And so you ask yourself, what did they actually see? Science produces these amazing stuff in our culture. And so the science is great. I'm a great, but when you're looking at what happened in the past, you can't see it. We can't go back. Now there's evidence in the present, so we've got this fossil. But this is a really amazing key thing. Just get it. This fossil exists in the present, right? It doesn't exist in the past. The fossil exists in the present, and that's why we can see it. That's why we can measure it, right? And then when somebody looking at this fossil, they say, in the school textbook, they say, this fossil shows how fish grew legs and came out onto the land 300 million years ago. And you say, well, did they see that? Nobody was there 300 million years ago to see it. They didn't see the fish grow legs. We see the fossil. So we are not afraid of any evidence. The evidence is there. It's the stories that we don't agree with. Does that make sense? It's the stories. And this is the key to making sense of it. It's the stories. And so evolution over millions of years, it's a story. It's a story that's invented so that God is not needed. And that's the key. I explained to Lily, I said, just realize they're telling you a story. It's a story that people have made up. Lots of very clever people have been involved in making this story up. But it's still a story. And the whole basis of the story is it's got to be a story where we don't need God in it. And so, come on, click on. Click me on, can you please? So evolution, this is the idea of evolution. This Charles Darwin's book here and how you have a single cell creature evolving over millions of years. Eventually you evolve fish and this sort of thing. That's the story of evolution. And that's what Darwin is famous for. And you'll have to click me on, young lady. But it's bigger than that. Evolution is the idea of explaining everything without God. So there's a universe. Where did the universe come from? Well, the Big Bang. Have you heard of the Big Bang? There was nothing, and then it exploded. There's a physicist called Lawrence Krauss. He's appeared on television in Australia and the ABC. He's written a book, A Universe from Nothing. And Richard Dawkins, when he was explaining to the audience about it, he says, you know, nothing is actually quite complicated. And everybody in the audience laughed just like you did. And he says, what's so funny about that? Anyway, but yeah, that's the idea. There was nothing and it exploded. And then there's geological evolution there where the Earth evolved. It was originally a great big molten blob and it evolved over billions of years. And then there is chemical evolution when there was no life and then suddenly life appeared. Chemicals changed into living things. Nobody knows how that happened. Nobody saw that happen. Biological evolution, nobody's seen that happen. And then human evolution where we evolved from apes or ape-like ancestors. Nobody saw that happen. And so here's this big story, the evolutionary story of how it happened, and it happened over millions of years. It's explained everything happened naturalistically. So don't think, when you hear these stories on television, don't think that science has made a discovery, that they've actually seen this. Nobody saw the Big Bang. Nobody was around with a thermometer measuring the temperature of the Earth 4 billion years ago. They weren't doing that. It's a made-up story to try to figure out how it could possibly happen, all happening by itself with no God involved. And if there's no God involved, there's no miracle worker. And if there's no miracle worker, you need lots of time. That's where the time comes from. Nobody's measured it. And 14,000 million years since the Big Bang. Isn't that? And actually, that was last year. This year is 14,000 million and one years. So this year. But that's being a bit facetious, isn't it? So that's the evolutionary story. And basically, it's atheism. So don't sort of think that this is science. This is atheism. It depends on the way you look at the evidence. And that's the key thing today. And so I made a point about evolution not being observed. And Richard Dawkins, he's saying here, evolution has been observed. It just hasn't been observed while it's happening. I love that. I like Richard Dawkins. I pray for Richard Dawkins regularly. It hasn't been observed while it's happening. So this is a textbook from high school, year 10, science, Oxford University Press, very prestigious, well-known, reliable organization produces this. And here they've got this little diagram up here about geology, and you've got a picture there of... of the fossils. It says here, this is the history of living things is determined by the fossils. It goes back 550 million years ago. And a lot of people see this, like kids when they see this in school, 550 million years ago, and they think, well, how does that work? And so a lot of people, when they see that, they think, well, maybe I'm reading Genesis wrong. Maybe Genesis is, there's a different way of reading it so that it doesn't disagree with science. And there's lots of different ways of reinterpreting Genesis. Maybe the days were long periods of time. Maybe God used evolution as his way of creating, theistic evolution. Maybe there's a gap. So you've heard of the gap between Genesis 1 verse 1 and Genesis 1 verse 2? And you can go on. There's lots and lots of different reinterpretations as to how Genesis can fit in, you know, with the millions of years, which is made up by the atheistic sciences. But if you start with evolution and the Bible, and if you want to make them agree, guess which one gets modified? The Bible has to get modified. And that's the problem. Once you start modifying the Bible, you destroy the whole basis for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so I don't know if anybody's heard about Lake Mungo. It's down there in New South Wales. Lake Mungo. There's down in that area, there's some sand dunes. And because of certain things there, they were very interested in knowing the ages of the sand dunes. And so they did various tests. They've done a lot of tests for dating methods, and it's got all sorts of different answers. But the latest sort of idea is that it's about 60,000 years to 40,000 years of age. Come on. So it's about 60,000 years to 40,000 years of age, which, of course, is a lot longer than 6,000 years, isn't it? And so there must be something wrong with the dating methods. But the big problem is this, is that the reason why they're dating these dunes is they found graves here, graves of Aboriginal people. And that's where you get the idea that Aboriginal people have been in Australia for 60,000 years, 40,000 years from these sorts of dates. But this Aboriginal, one thing you can sort of tell about the Aboriginal is he's dead. That's right, he's dead. And so that means if he was buried 60,000 years ago, that means death has been around for 60,000 years, doesn't it? Is that right? But we know that's not true, because the Bible tells us as a consequence of man's sin that death came into the world. Sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin. And in this way, death came to all men because all have sinned. And so when people say that maybe God used evolution, here you've got death and suffering being around long before Adam and Eve. It's just part of the way God made the world, is with death and suffering. But the Bible says that death came into the world as a consequence of man's actions. Whereas evolution says that death and disease and suffering has been around for millions of years. Do you see a contradiction there? Do you see a problem there? That's why creation is so important, so foundational to the gospel. And that's why when you get that straight and you know that you can rely on it and there's no problem with it, you're confident in it, it makes a big difference to our confidence in the Lord and our confidence in sharing the gospel with others. That can't be right. And so how do we explain that? Well, another little cartoon. I use cartoons because it's very hard to get pictures of Adam and Eve. But I've got Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden here. So we got this little picture here. And it's a very good world. Remember when God created, he looked at everything that he'd made and said, it's very good. And yet, if we put those millions of years in to the Bible, no matter how you do it, what you do is you end up with Adam and Eve sitting on all these layers of rock. You know, the history of the world determined by paleontology, by the fossils. And what does that talk about? Death, suffering, and disease. Doesn't fit there. So that's the key. And understanding how that works makes a huge difference. I puzzled about it for years and years and years trying to figure this out. And it was as a consequence of reading a book and other stuff that really made sense and coming across Creation Ministries. So it's the Noah's flood. These fossils were laid down during Noah's flood. It wasn't before Adam and Eve. It was after Adam and Eve, and it didn't take millions of years. It happened very rapidly as a consequence of a huge catastrophe that the Bible describes in Genesis chapter 6, 7, and 8. So Noah's flood explains the fossils and the paleontologists who talk about the history of the world according to paleontology. They're talking about the wrong thing. It's the burial of animals and plants during Noah's flood, not the during that 1 year period. And so we can talk a little bit about Noah's Ark. I won't go into a lot about it, but a lot of people have got a wrong impression of Noah's Ark. They think it was a small boat, looked like a bathtub, and the animals are sticking out of it. It's a very cute fairy story, but no, it's a big boat. It's 140 meters long, longer than a football field, had three decks, it was higher than a four-story building. It had a capacity of 15,000 tons, incredibly stable, according to Korean naval architects have analyzed it. So it was big enough to do what the Bible said it did. It's a story which makes sense with what we know of the world, Noah's flood. And we read there about how God took all the animals on. And you think about how many dogs would you have to take on? You'd have the dogs everywhere, wouldn't you? Thousands of dogs. Well, not really. You just have two dogs. Because all the dogs we've got today have been bred up from the dog kind. So they're just varieties of dogs. That's all. They would have started with a couple of mongrel dogs, maybe looking like a wolf or something like that. That's not evolution. That's a whole nother story. That's just dogs. And there's a brochure up there. Can you tell the difference between natural selection and evolution? And what about the horses? How many horses would he have to take on? You know, well, these are all part of the horse kind. The zebra, the horse, and the donkey. They can interbreed together. That's how creation biologists, so one of the criteria they use for determining if these animals, different animals, belong to this one kind. God created the different kinds of animals. Noah was to take two of every kind of air-breathing animal on the ark and two of every kind of bird. And so these were the one kind, the horse kind. And so they can interbreed. And here we have an example in Creation Magazine, painless way to keep it to sort of grow in this, a cross between a zebra and a horse. Do you know what you call a cross between a zebra and a horse? It's up there, it's a zorse. Here's a picture of it. Isn't it cute? A cross between a zebra and a horse. And there's lots of examples. You can Google it on the internet and you find lots of examples of this, of these animals like that. And so the ark, you know, the waters came from under the earth and it lifted the ark and it rained and the waters lifted up the ark until it covered every high mountain under the entire heavens were covered and everything that had the breath of life in it perished. That explains the whole thing, how it works together. And Noah's flood is the key that washes away the millions of years. It all happened quickly as a consequence of Noah's flood. And we find the fossils. This is at the museum down in Brisbane, Muttaburrasaurus, found on a farm, a station out near Muttaburra. That's why they called it Muttaburrasaurus. So you find these animals, which it had to be buried quickly in order to be preserved. And we find that was found out somewhere out this way. There's other animals we find there as well that are buried. It's a whole graveyard of animals which are buried during Noah's flood. This Richmond plesiosaur. Look at that. Farmer just found the skull of this and he knew it wasn't a cow. So he rang up the museum and here they are excavating. It's lying on its back. It's 4 meters long. It's incredibly well preserved. There must have been a catastrophe here, the paleontologist said. Why would they think there was a catastrophe? Well, it was preserved so well. Even the flippers, even the bones in his flipper are preserved. Incredible. And so we find that. And you go out to Ayers Rock. There's evidence everywhere. And we run field trips around the Sunshine Coast every now and then about looking at evidence for Noah's flood around here. Has anybody here been on one of those field trips? I was talking to somebody. We'll have to run a couple more up here so that you can go and have a look. People, they when they sort of explain what they're looking at, they say, wow. And then they write in later on and they start talking about the things that they've seen, other things they've seen. And then they say, I look at the world totally different now. And we do field trips for some of the schools here. We take them out to Caloundra and have a look at the rocks and that sort of thing. But this is Ayers Rock, and just nearby is the Olgas, Katachuka. Who's been to the Olgas? Anybody been there? A few people? It's amazing, isn't it? You go in between these domes, they go hundreds of meters into the air, and amazing is that it's made of these boulders, packed, jam-packed with boulders. These have been rounded by being washed in water, you know, rolled along in a river. So, wow, that must have been some river to make those boulders like that. And come on. And this is just an example of the boulders jam-packed in together, and you can see how they're rounded, and geologists can work out which way the water was flowing from the way the boulders are lying. That's at Katachuka. And also you look at, say, the Three Sisters, and that's evidence of Noah's flood as well. And when you look at this top, you look how flat that, a little bit of water over a long time. That's what the geologists say at the university. They don't believe in Noah's flood. But we believe in Noah's flood, and we look at that and we say, wow, that's a lot of water and a short time. And there's a lot of evidence, actually. For example, you can look at the flat surface. Have you ever wondered why the surface is so flat there? Well, that was during Noah's flood. Remember, what did it say about the waters? The waters rose and they rose and they rose and they rose until every high mountain under the entire heavens were covered. So when the water's covering all the continents, guess what? It's going to smooth the continents flat. And that's why the surface is flat. And then as the waters were running off the continents while Noah was in the ark, eventually the mountain, the tops came above the water, and the water's running off, and you've got these really big channels here which are full of which were full of water at one stage, and there's only a little bit of water running down there now. So there's a lot of evidence for Noah's flood, and we don't have time to go into all of it. How are we going? What is the time? 2:15. We're good? Okay, so this lady's name is Mary Schweitzer. She loves dinosaurs, and she's done a lot of work with dinosaurs, and she's become famous because of what she discovered in dinosaurs. She had some dinosaur bones. They smelt really funny, and they didn't smell like they were petrified. They smelled bad. And so she looked at them under a microscope, and she discovered that inside the dinosaur bones, they actually had red blood cells. Incredible. Nobody had ever thought about looking inside a dinosaur bone to see if it had blood cells before, but she did it. This is about nearly 20 years ago, something like that she did it. And she published the article because she got really caned because they said she was a hopeless scientist, she had contamination, and she hadn't done it properly. And because the reason why is this, is because she said, explained why it was so controversial. She said it was exactly like looking at a slice of modern bone. But of course, I couldn't believe it. Why couldn't she believe it? She's looking at it. She said it's exactly like a slice of modern bone. I said to the lab technician, the bones, after all, are 65 million years old. How could blood cells survive that long? Isn't that amazing? So she's looking at it, can't believe it, because they're 65 million years old. And that's the whole key, is that she could have said this. She said to the lab technician, after all, the Earth is young, after all. She doesn't even entertain that thought, because if the Earth is young, it means it couldn't have evolved, and it means that God created. Right, so the whole issue of the age of the Earth is a central issue, and that's why she was attacked. because this is such powerful evidence that the earth is young. And you find this is all over the internet. If you type in Mary Schweitzer, you'll find some. And she's found more stuff since then. And the debate goes on. We've put it in Creation Magazine, in lots of places. Evidence, direct evidence that the world is young. But the point is that people don't want to believe it because they're looking for a way to explain it without God. And we think that the science is objective. We think that they're searching for truth. They're only searching for certain things, an explanation without God. That's the whole point. And so once you realize that, that's their way, the way they are looking at the world, we can say, we don't agree with that. We start with what is true, the Word of God. And that's what we're going to look at the world through that lens, not this atheistic view. And that's the whole point as to where we are in our country today. So we're back to the seven seas of history, and we've just touched on how that makes sense. The create makes sense of the gospel, makes sense of the flood, makes sense of the age of the earth. Now, I had a guy, Colin Gibson, he's with the Friends group down on the Gold Coast, and he's got an interesting story, which we've published on creation.com, about his journey. He's studied as an engineer, but like all young people, like everybody, this is an issue which people wrestle with in their lives. And he first heard about evolution at school, and he says, I didn't even suspect the state school I attended would have lied about and therefore about evolution, and therefore I believe the evolution story was taught was true. I wouldn't have really said that they lied. I would say that they were teaching a lie. They were teaching something which they thought was true, which was not true. So they were teaching what they believed was true, usually. But it really comes across as a lie about where we came from. And he says there was no point in attending church. If evolution's true, there's no point in going to church. So I stopped attending and I led a very secular lifestyle. And that's why it's such an important issue. And you sort of think, well, what do we need? We need something that is going to be easy for people to follow. We need something which is going to deal with the issues that they encounter, deals with the sticking points in their lives, things like the age of the earth, things like, you know, evolution and why it's not the way it's portrayed to be. We need something simple. And there's lots of books. We got lots of books on that. But, you know, one of the best resources, I think, is this Creation Magazine, because it deals with so many different topics. Now, somebody might be a geologist, but they're sick of reading about geology, but they'd like to read an article about birds or about stars or something. So we always encourage people, if you've got a friend that is not a believer and you're sharing with him, drop him a copy of Creation Magazine or get him a subscription. So that's the magazine. It's also a great resource. If you're sort of wanting to sort of help your family to grow, Creation Magazine is a great resource for you.